You're listening to New Mexico Film Works.
You're listening to New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, brought to you by the generosity of Hutton Broadcasting. New Mexico Film Works is a program of the New Mexico State Film Office, and I'm your host, Dirk Norris. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking with Monique Nair from the Santa Fe Community College. But first on the phone, we have Megan Kamerick. Hello, Megan.
Hi, Dirk.
Megan has worked in Milwaukee, San Antonio, New Orleans, and is now in Albuquerque. She's covered real estate, economic development, the environment, law, higher education, philanthropy, small business, tourism, the film industry, and the creative economy. She's recently left her job of 8 years with New Mexico Business Weekly and is hosting and producing Public Square on New Mexico Public Broadcasting. And she's the immediate past president of Journalism and Women in Symposium. Pretty good there, Megan.
Thanks, Dirk.
So a little more brief background. How long have you been in Albuquerque?
I've been here about 8 years.
Eight years, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All that time with the Business Journal, Business Weekly?
Yes, yeah, I came here to take that job. I moved here from New Orleans about a year before Katrina, and I took the job at the Business Weekly, and then I started doing radio stuff on the side.
Okay, so you've been in here for 8 years, and for a lot of people, it's the land of entrapment. Any plans on moving anywhere else?
You know, when I first moved here, I kept meeting people, say, hey, how did you get here? I'm like, oh, I was driving in my van to California, and it broke down. That was 20 years ago.
Exactly.
And I was like, that's odd. Yes, Dirk, I am in the land of entrapment. We had not planned, my husband and I, to stay here, but, you know, life doesn't always evolve the way you plan it as you move into your 40s, as I'm sure people can identify with. And, I won't go into the details unless you want to, but let's just say he found a job not really in his profession, but he now has a pretty good job at the University of New Mexico, and I've actually found a lot of opportunities here. So, yeah, we didn't think this was going to be home, but it looks like it is. So.
Yeah, and
it's the first place. It's a lovely place.
Yeah, I've heard that van breaking down in somewhere in the state, too, and it's a pretty common story.
Yeah.
Part of what you have covered, too, is tourism and film. And you were at the Chatham Governors Conference on Tourism in Taos recently, weren't you?
I did hear Don Gray talk. And he is the locations coordinator for the tourism department, but he wanted to talk about that we haven't really leveraged our successful film industry for tourism purposes.
Right. And mentioned that there were things communities could do. And in one of your...
He was twofold. He was sort of calling on people to look at what could we do to leverage more of that, but also giving communities an overview, like how can you be more film friendly?
Right.
What are some things that he needs that you can do? And, you know, I've wondered this for a number of years, I have to say, covering both industries, like why are we not leveraging more of the film industry? Because people, if done the right way, people will travel to places where films have been filmed. That might not be the only reason they go there.
Right.
But it's like icing on the cake if you can offer that, or they could extend their stay another day, you know, and that's what the tourism department's trying to do, get people to stay longer.
Absolutely, and there have been a number of studies that show that people will, they will travel more and they will stay longer if they're aware of a film, and it doesn't necessarily have to be anything where they go to see a particular building or a particular landscape, but they will go to an area because of that film. And then, of course, that means that translates into more hotel stays and more restaurant visits.
Yeah, I think I think Taos has already put together a film itinerary that's on their site at taos.org. And Ghost Ranch is trying out some new film tours. You know, people already go to Ghost Ranch, but this is just something extra. It's a beautiful area anyway, so you know, it's like an hour-long tour of things that have been used in films there. So
sure.
I guess there's work ongoing between tourism and the film department to to bring this to fruition and have a more robust sort of itineraries for people. So
yeah,
it's a good idea.
Yeah, and we're certainly, the film office is certainly going to spend more time developing this and seeing, you know, they can't do the tourism, but encouraging the communities and providing them the information with the movies that have been shot in their area and some suggestions with, you know, what they can do to bring the mm-hmm. tourists there. Right.
And I think, randomly, I just was wandering downtown a few years ago, taking photos of in plain sight was shooting, as mm-hmm. usually were downtown. And I ran into a woman who's an attorney, and we started talking, and she told me her sister absolutely loves this show, and mm-hmm. she came to visit her, and she was like, I want to see this place that this happened. I want to go here. I want to go there. I want to see this. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, and the guys that have the Albuquerque trolley are going to be doing tours of Breaking Bad and In Plain Sight and some of the other movies.
Yeah, well, the Albuquerque Trolley Company does have, they have a monthly Trolleywood tour where they take people on places, and they point out where various things have been used in films or TV shows here. And now I understand, I think Jesse and Michael are going to enhance that and do some special tours just around maybe Breaking Bad and In Plain Sight, because there are quite a few places now.
Yeah, right.
Breaking Bad is hugely popular, and In Plain Sight as well. So right. I think there's a real market for it if you do it. And I mentioned something in the past, tourism folks, and they're sort of like, they see the rail yards, and then what do they do? And it's like, well, yeah, but that's not the point. You don't have to have an amusement park.
Absolutely.
I mean, then they'll go to Old Town, or they'll go up the tram, or, you know, it's just another thing they can do.
Right. So. It's a matter of getting them here, and then there's all kinds of things they can do, but the films will get them here, and they want to look around.
Yeah.
And I understand the Hollywood tour that they do, the trolley, that their first sessions were booked up well in advance. So,
I think he sells out every month on that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's talk a little bit now about women in media. And recently there was the showing of Misrepresentation down in Albuquerque at Continuing Ed. And that was put on by Women in Technology, part of New Mexico Technology Council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And you were kind of a moderator for the discussion afterwards. But so this is a film that discussed how women are portrayed in media and misrepresented in media.
Yes, it's actually Jennifer Seibel was the filmmaker. And I guess came from her own personal journey. I think she was an actress. And then as she's getting ready to give birth to a child, she's trying to figure out what kind of world her child's going to be born into. And so she takes it upon herself to sort of explore it through this film. It's very ambitious. She looks at a lot of different things.
Yeah, it's pretty broad.
She looks at filmmaking. She looks at media. She looks at images, basically every kind of media, and from the perspective of older women, but also young girls and the messages that they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's pretty well done. It's very powerful.
And I think you said this was the second time you saw it. Were there things in there when you first saw it that surprised you?
Yeah, there were. I mean, these are issues I think about a lot because I was so involved with the Journalism and Women's Symposium thinking about women in media, mm-hmm. but also was I was preparing a talk for the TEDx Albuquerque last fall about women in media. So I thought I was pretty hip to a lot of things, but sitting through her film, it was just angering me all over again and shocking me all over again.
Right.
Just looking at how, for instance, Hillary Clinton was treated in the media during mm-hmm. the presidential campaign,
mm-hmm.
looking at how women are portrayed and their bodies are used consistently all the time, hypersexualized to sell things, you know, everything from like soda to toothpaste to movies.
Right.
And also, I thought it was great that they have some really great men in it too, and I think that's important. This is not just a women's issue. This is about how we portray reality in our society. We're not getting an accurate picture of reality in our media, and that goes for news media all the way to films.
Right.
And what's wonderful is to have some perspective. Someone like Paul Haggis, who pointed out that, you know, in the past, totally true because I've studied film history. You know, they now, it's very rare to see a woman carrying a film in Hollywood and say, oh, she's not bankable. Well, you know, Joan Crawford, Barbara Stanwyck, Betty Davis, those were very bankable stars in the 40s and 50s. They carried films. They had enormous power. So it's kind of interesting to have that historical perspective. And they played a variety of roles. They weren't slotted into one kind of role.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that we've lost that.
Yeah, something has kind of changed over time. It is. The women have just pretty much been minimalized.
I think one of the women talks about, it's like Logan's Run or something. It's like all of a sudden women just, if you were looking to get your picture of reality from films, you think like we kill off all women when they hit 40 or something.
Yeah.
Or we put them in cryogenic stasis and then they're revived at like 60 to come back and play grandmothers.
Oh, yeah, right. Or, yeah. Megan, we're going to take a break here in just a minute, and we're going to be back talking more about misrepresentation and how women are portrayed in the media. You're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be back in just a minute. We're back, and you're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. My name is Dirk Norris, and our guest today is Megan Kamrick, and talking about the film Misrepresentation, portraying or how women are portrayed in media. Welcome back, Megan.
Thanks, Dirk. It's great to be here.
So you were mentioning that this is not just a women's issue, it's a human, it's a people issue. So that includes some of the perspectives of men. And what was nice, too, was there was a little bit of a discussion on how men are kind of taught to be in a particular way that is not most beneficial for women.
That's true. I think the film interviewed... I think it's Cory Booker. He's the mayor of Newark. I got his name right. And he mentioned that he was saying to a woman, you know, how tough it is to be a woman. And she said, I wouldn't want to be a man. And I think she called them emotionally constipated.
Yeah, right.
Like they're not able to sit and express their emotions necessarily with one another and kind of process with their friends. So they do touch on that in the film and sort of the gender roles that constrict both men and women.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of interesting to bring up. You know, I think it primarily focuses on women, but I think it was good to bring those perspectives in because having, they interviewed someone else and I can't remember who he was. He's an author and maybe a filmmaker. And he either wrote or made a film about, you know, the damaging effects of machismo or something like that. But I thought that was helpful to bring those things up in the film because having this kind of roles informed by media don't help anybody.
Yeah, right.
Healthy relationships.
I heard somebody say they don't want to look at men and women. They just want to look at people as far as people being in the industry and working. But I think... you do have to make that distinction somewhat in just identifying the problem and finding solutions for it.
Well, and I think that's an admirable sentiment, but you also have to acknowledge how women and minorities have not had a level playing field.
Yeah.
And they still don't in the industry. And so you can't kind of start from that assumption of like, well, everyone's just people. I'm like, yeah,
But it
comes down to, I think I touched on in my TED Talk, there's a great guy named Shankar Vedantam who wrote this book called The Hidden Brain, and he's on NPR occasionally, who talks about our unconscious biases. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it comes down to. It's still, I will be optimistic and say it's still rare to find people just egregiously racist or sexist, although God knows you don't have to spend too long on the internet to find them.
Oh, yeah, right.
They're there commenting constantly, being trolled.
Right.
But often what is happening is just an unconscious bias that you're not even aware of. And I think Dolores Huerta in the film said something about if there isn't a woman at the table, you're not going to make a good decision. And that's sort of what I'm getting at, is that there are things that can happen that you didn't mean to be nasty or harmful or leave anyone out, but you didn't have them at the table.
Right, right.
You didn't have their perspective.
Yeah, you didn't have that perspective, and thereby you're not making complete decisions, I guess, or
right.
information that is
you're not getting the full picture.
Yeah.
What did I say? In the TED Talk, I use this clip from The Guardian, which they still use this tagline, the whole picture, I think, mm-hmm. The Guardian in England. Get the whole picture.
Yeah. One of the things I found interesting in the film, and you mentioned Hillary Clinton, is how what men and women said was reported in the media, in the print, and that where a woman complained about something, a man stated something.
Oh, yeah. That's very interesting. There's been a lot of content analysis around these things.
Mm-hmm. And that comes,
yeah, that,
that's just kind of a very subtle difference, but it has
exactly.
a big impact.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
it does have a big impact.
Yeah.
You don't even know that it's sinking into your brain.
Right, right. And that's, I think, where media literacy really comes in teaching people how to be a little more critical in what they read and what they see.
You know, I brought this up in the discussion after the film. It's a site that I found earlier this year, I think, actually from George Takei.
Mm-hmm.
If you follow him on Facebook, he's hilarious, but he also has some very serious stuff. And the Bechdel test, Bechdel. And you can go to the website and see how people rank movies based on this test. And it's simple criteria. The movie has to have at least two named women in it, like characters with names,
right.
who talk to each other about something besides a man.
Oh, right.
And it's kind of amazing how few movies can reach that criteria.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that you say women with a name, because I see, you know, it's over and over and over again in movies, and I really am waiting for somebody to do a mashup of this where they say, you know, take the gold but leave the girl, and it's always the girl.
Yeah.
Which, and it's like in every single movie. Women don't have names.
You know, I think I brought it up. Well, they talk to a lot of young women in the film, which I thought was great,
mm-hmm.
because some of them are, God, they're impressive.
Yeah.
The young woman who was, I think it was a kind of a junior political group in California. I can't remember her name. She's so impressive. And
right.
and all some of them just heartbreaking stories. They're under so much pressure, especially to live up to an ideal that isn't even real, because you see how they show you how they Photoshop
right,
pictures.
Sure.
And, models. And, these are not even real images they're looking at.
Right.
But they're also just so insightful. One woman brought up, you know, she brought up Star Trek, which I am a huge nerd. I love Star Trek. And they show the scene of the last movie when he's driving up his motorcycle, looking at the big ship under construction, pondering his destiny.
Right.
And she said, I want to see women doing that. When did they get to have the protagonist role where they're trying to find their destiny? And it's so rare. I think you and I talked about this on Facebook, and I think it was you brought up Whale Rider, and I said, yes, that is a great movie. It is so rare to see a movie like that.
Right, yeah, that was brought up in our discussion, and you said, that's great, one example, give me another.
I know, well, give me more. And the thing that's great is that, as you know, I'm sure you've discussed on your show, I am hopeful because media is splintering so much, and now you can make your own movies for so much less money than you used to. The technology is all out there.
Right.
And you can get training at a number of New Mexico schools and make your own media and distribute it. I'm not saying you have the power of something like the Avengers, but who knows in 5 years where that system's going to be. I don't know. YouTube is like the second most visited website in the world.
Yeah, and it's become very democratic, and anybody with virtually no money can get stuff up and get their message out. And who knows what becomes viral, but it suddenly it's out there. Megan, we got to go here.
Okay.
I really appreciate you being on, and look forward to talking to you again sometime in the future. And good luck with your all that you're doing in your media world.
I appreciate that, Dirk.
You bet. This is New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be back with Monique O'Neill from Santa Fe Community College in just a minute. Back, and I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and this is New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. You can hear this show streaming on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio by going to santafe.com and clicking on the live stream link. You can also hear this and previous shows on podcast by going to santafe.com and clicking on the podcast link. With me in the studio now is Monique O'Neill from Santa Fe Community College. Monique is an assistant professor who teaches film production, critical theory classes, and all the female filmmaking classes for women and teens. She's currently the chair of the Santa Fe Community College Film Program and has produced an eclectic mix of short films in New Mexico, Fool's Gold, Delivery Date, Road Closed, and won awards for her cinematography at Willamette Valley, Houston, and Sedona Film Festivals. 1350 and When Near the Sound, Monique is completing her master's work in educational leadership with the University of New Mexico, and her research is focused on job attainability and sustainability for both men and women completing their filmmaking education in New Mexico with the desire to work in the state. Welcome, Monique.
Thank you.
How long have you, I just wanted to get a little bit of background. How long have you been in New Mexico?
I've been here 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually it's going to be 13 years in July. So that's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Very quickly. And how long have you been at the community college?
I've been at the community college since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And I started part-time with the film technician training program there and also teaching some classes in the media arts program. And then I took full reign of the kind of film technician and film program in 2008.
And you obviously enjoy teaching. What do you get out of it?
Well, I think, for me, teaching has always been the best way to learn about myself and also about the technology I'm teaching. Usually I feel if I can teach technology in a comprehensive way, then that means I understand it.
Right.
So that's always been kind of the way that I've kind of judged whether or not I'm familiar with or comfortable with the technology I'm using.
Terrific. And you're teaching some courses specifically for women and girls, and that's coming up this summer?
Yeah, so this summer, we do every summer a workshop called Girls Make Media, which is geared for young women 15 to 25. And it's a week-long workshop that will be happening July 9th through the 13th at the community college. And really, Girls Make Media and Women Make Media and these different classes that are what we would call more female-focused mm-hmm. have really developed from a lot of my own studies and work with Deborah Fort, who started Girls Film School over at the College of Santa Fe in 2000, and also the work of Dr. Martha Lawson, who is from the University of San Diego. And or University of California at San Diego. And she has put out a report called The Celluloid Ceiling. And she looks at the top 250 grossing films in the United States
mm-hmm.
and looks at how many women are actually working in production on those films. So not just in front of the camera, but behind.
Right.
And at this point, less than 10% of the films are being directed by women in that market, and less than 3% are being shot. So cinematographers, for example, there's less than 3% of women actually lensing these films.
Right. We just earlier had Megan Kamerick on the show, and we were talking about the movie Misrepresentation that talks about women in media and how they're portrayed and the lack of women in the industry. it's kind of pervasive.
Well, and it's interesting because this when this industry got started in the early 1900s, it was actually run by women. I mean, until it became a big money business, it really was a lot of women were involved with it. A lot of women were directing. So I think it's kind of interesting, you know, the kind of male domination of the top mainstream media market still exists. But I think you can see in documentary, also in a lot of the kind of what we would call subversive culture films, there's a lot more female participation.
Right. And one of the things Megan brought up was that earlier in film, women had some pretty powerful roles, and that's just kind of gone away completely.
Yeah, and again, we're harking back to, you know, the advent of the medium. So we're talking about the early 1900s at that point. And when, you know, the 1920s and 30s, when Hollywood started getting its feet under itself, really, the powerful women from that era. Lucille Ball, Joan Crawford, you know, those are the women who, and again, it was money, it was economics. And they were able to actually put funding into films and into studios and really make that headway. And that doesn't mean women aren't there. You know, mm-hmm. there's quite a few women that are working in the industry, and I think, you know, it's really looking at the mainstream media, which is the main consuming media, you know, the stuff that we normally get, that is actually dominated by male producers and male directors. Catherine Bigelow, right? Mm-hmm. Made the big stretch. But it was interesting because the articles that were written about her really talked about her handsomeness and how she compared to the men and really didn't go into, you know, it was really about her feminism, you know, but in the whole thing, she says, I just want to be remembered as a director, not as a female director.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So I think, you know, again, it's that kind of pioneering spirit with any industry that is kind of dominated by one culture or another, it's that kind of movement of having that minority come forth and stick their finger in the pot, so to speak.
Right. There's a movie going to be shown at Santa Fe University of Art and Design on June 23rd called Lost Garden, The Life and Cinema of Alice Guy Blanche, who is purportedly the first female director.
Mm-hmm.
So that's,
and I'm going to be on that panel. So
yeah.
I'll be there that night. Yeah.
Okay. Terrific. That's, at, Tipton Hall. Is
mm-hmm.
that right? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's at the Santa Fe University campus.
Right.
So we're over at the community college. Yeah.
And so, who else is on the panel for that?
Well, I know Janet Davidson's putting it together. I'm not sure who the folks are. I'm sure it'll be released soon.
Yeah. Right.
Soon to be announced. Coming soon.
Yeah. And I hopefully can attend that. I'm looking forward to that. So some of these issues about women in film you discuss with the summer program and later in the fall program.
We don't focus too much on, you know, what we can't change kind of thing. What we really focus on in these programs is kind of having that hands-on experience. So mm-hmm. The girls program is really geared as a summer camp. And so we do everything from makeup to experimental film to blue screen work to, cinematography and editing and all of those and performance. And we just have a really good time and it's hands on. So it's really kind of immersive. And the idea is, you know what, if you like it, take it. You know, go with it. And right. I think that's really what we're looking for in these classes. And it's not so much saying, hey, we're going to reinvent the wheel or we're going to, woman power. We're going to stream the streets. we're really trying to, just say, hey, it's available. And I think because a lot of what happens in these technology-based classes is they're dominated by men. Mm-hmm. And there is a culture where if there's a piece of technology in the room, the guys just gravitate towards it. And the women tend to stand back because they're like, I'm not going to get into that mess mm-hmm. that's going on over there. So it's really saying, hey, you know, everybody's going to get their hands on the technology and you're going to be able to shoot this film and you're going to make your own movie. And that's what we do in the summer program.
Terrific. And what age group is this?
We really are focused with this age group from 15 to 25. Mm-hmm. But we always have a few folks who I always have some women call us. I know I'm in my 40s, but I'm like a girl. You know, I'm really my spirit is like it. I said, OK, well, hey, come on in. But we also offer in the fall a Women Make Media class for women who are over 18 mm-hmm. and who are wanting to, you know, get the same experience that these girls are, having this hands-on experience, getting introduced to all of this stuff. So this fall, we'll also have that class for women over 18.
Is script writing included in this, or are they going to have something to work from?
Yes, script writing is included. So we go through everything from, you know, visualization, so ideation, that whole idea of how do I tell my story? Mm-hmm. And we're really looking at, you know, what is a female-centric story? You know, it's obviously going to be coming from a woman. You know, that's the story. And we go through script writing and kind of the industry standard practices, of course, and then they get to make those movies, those mm-hmm. stories that they develop.
And they'll be shown somewhere?
We show them the last day of the class, and that's open to the public. And it's usually from 3:30 to 4:30 on the last day of the class, which would be the 13th of July. And if anybody wants more info, they can get in touch with us, filminfo@sfcc.edu, or join us on our Facebook page, SFCC Film, and they can find out info about when that screening is.
Terrific. And you have a number of programs going on for film, and I was happy to be able to attend the showcase for the students, the graduating students this year. That was really wonderful. So what else do you have going on?
During the summer, we have kind of abbreviated programs. Usually we're doing a lot of catch-up for students who are doing the degree program, classes that they need to take. And, you know, taking classes in the summer, you're trying to cram 16 weeks of material into 8, right. So that's always fun for everybody. But we have a lot of video production editing classes going on, screenwriting, performance, and those are classes that we have going on continuously every semester. And so in the fall, we offer more advanced classes like with, you know, advanced cinematography, editing, so things that are going to get more intensive. That's right. What we do in the regular semester.
Right. And how many students are enrolled in the program over there?
We have 190 majors right now in the program, and we have about you know, it's hard to estimate because sometimes people just come in to take one class at the community college, which is sure. fine, which we love, gives us lots of diversity. Yeah. But we have about 300 students taking classes.
And are you able to track the students once they leave the community college? Or are they continuing on in New Mexico or going elsewhere?
Well, it's interesting you brought that up because my research for my graduate work right now is focused on that. I'm looking at job attainability and job sustainability mm-hmm. for students who have gone through these film technician training programs statewide. So the sites of study are going to be Santa Fe Community College, Central New Mexico Community College, and Doña Ana, which were kind of the first programs that got off the ground training these film technicians. So if any film technicians are listening, you may get hit up by us for some questions. but we're going to be tracking with help from the union and from the film office, you know, where these students have ended up. Are they still here? Are they sustaining work? And what does that look like? So this is a big question, I think, on everyone's mind. It's like, where is everyone going?
You know? Excellent. I'll be looking forward to the results that you come up with.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to travel with my presentation. Yeah, well, you know, that's always right. The dream of the graduate student.
Yeah, right.
Being paid to present.
Monica, really appreciate you being on the show today. You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC, and we'll be right back with John Armijo. This is New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, and we have John Armijo from the film office on the line now. John, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
So we're talking about Las Vegas in the past?
That's right. We're going to visit Las Vegas, where the futuristic film The Golden God was made at a budget of $50,000. At the time, it was the most expensive film made in the United States. In 1912, Sigmund Lubin, the studio head of Lubin Films, based out of Philadelphia, created a location company to make films throughout the Southwest. In 1913, after filming in Texas and Arizona, the company moved to Silver City, New Mexico, where they produced 13 films. Lubin's managing director of the company was Romaine Fielding, who was also a leading actor, writer, director, and producer. If Fielding's name doesn't ring a bell, you are not alone. In spite of his many achievements, he is barely a footnote in the annals of American film history. While the company was in Silver City, Fielding received word from the motion picture Story magazine that movie fans had voted him the most popular photo player in America. Box office stars like Mary Pickford, Francis X. Bushman, Bronco Billy, you remember him, and other favorites didn't even come close in the voting. The magazine reported that Fielding won by 500,000 votes. Las Vegas in 1913 was a bustling, cosmopolitan oasis on the Santa Fe Trail and the hub of the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. Victorian, Queen Anne, Italianate, and Romanesque revival architecture lined the streets in every direction an electric trolley car or one's footsteps could take them. Las Vegas had two motion picture theaters, the Brown and Photoplay, and they had the Duncan Opera House, a world-class venue for opera, stage plays, and vaudeville acts. The location company arrived in late July, and within a week, Fielding had set up a studio on Gaina Street on the east side of town, and a few weeks later, he leased the Plaza Hotel on the west side, which he changed the name of to Hotel Romaine. And after all these years, the name is still visible on the side of the hotel. Thank you, lead-based paint. By the end of October, after completing 9 films, Fielding began pre-production on The Golden God, a 5-reel futuristic drama. The story explained by Fielding to the Las Vegas Daily Optic takes place in America in 1950 when the world is controlled by the consolidated industries headed by might and power, known as the Golden God. An uprising of other forces known as the labor revolution is threatened. The culmination of the world-old struggle between capital and labor is reached in the great war between the people and the organized armies of the world controlled by the Golden God, played by Fielding. Fielding orchestrated, by newspaper accounts, a realistic choreography of war with bombs blasting everywhere amidst a mob storming head-on to battle soldiers, tanks, armored vehicles, machine guns, and aerial bombardment. Dirk, this may have been the first time an airplane was used in a silent film as a weapon. And this was the first time an airplane had flown over the Meadow City. Fielding had commissioned 3 pilots in the airplanes, but because of bad weather, he had to settle for one. The Optic reported that Fielding spent $15,000 on ammunition, powder, and explosives. And he hired 5,000 extras at $2 each per day and $2.50 if they brought a horse. U.S. Cavalry and Infantry Company H and Troop A and hundreds of their horses participated in the battle scenes that took 17 days to shoot. The Optic also reported that the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe brought in hundreds of spectators daily to witness the spectacle. For the dramatic final war scenes, Mayor Toppert issued a movie holiday and closed down the entire town so that everyone can participate in the filming as extras or spectators. The Optic wrote this about the final scene: the magnitude, the grandeur, the awe-inspiring magnificence of this wonder scene was beyond description. It staggered words to tell of its wondrous beauty and depth of thought. Such a marvel. Such a picture could not have been conceived, saved in the dreamer mind of such an artist of stagecraft as Romaine Fielding, the Belasco of the photoplay. Because Fielding's story was too close to the labor unrest building across the nation, the National Board of Censorship of Motion Pictures rejected The Golden God because of its inflammatory nature and refused to release the film. Unfortunately, we'll never know. In 1914, a fire at Lubin's film storage vault destroyed the prints and negatives of scores of Lubin films, including almost every one that Fielding produced. But was The Golden God one of them? I don't think so. I believe it survived the fire, and it's sitting on a shelf in a film vault somewhere in Europe waiting to be discovered.
Oh, man, that's like out of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Or Peter Jackson's film, Forgotten Silver.
Okay.
So there you go. Metal City in 1913.
Yeah, and the architecture of Las Vegas is rather unique in the state, right, with the Victorian and everything.
They have more homes in the National Registry than any city in the United States.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding.
And so that makes Las Vegas a rather popular place to film.
Absolutely.
We have plenty of Adobe and Southwestern style everywhere in the state, but Las Vegas has the other.
Dirk, giddy up. I know you tried to talk your way out of it.
Well, okay. I was unsuccessful, obviously.
Andy Devine played Jingles on the Wild Bill Hitchcock TV show. What was the name of his horse?
I'm going to take a wild guess and say Fred.
Joker.
Okay, John. Thank you very much.
You betcha. See you next week.
All righty. And coming up this June... June 7th and 8th, the Geek Fest at the Chemo Theater. June 15th and 16th, the film office is going to be in California at the Locations Trade Show. June 22nd to July 8th at the Rail Yard, the Currents Media Festival will be going on. You can find out more about that at currentsnewmedia.org. And the Roswell Sci-Fi Film Festival is coming up as well. You can find more information about that at roswell.famousmonstersoffilmland.com. This is New Mexico Film Works. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and brought to you by Hutton Broadcasting on Talk 1260 KTRC.